The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Once again, I have a number of accolades that I have received from EWTN. I'm hesitant to say it because I am in training again for a Humility Award comeback. Yeah, I was out of the competition for 3 years after it was stolen. It was stolen by Al Cresta. I don't want to get into that right now. they just told me from EWTN, they said, congratulations, Ray. Your show is the only program on all of our Catholic radio shows where the broadcast delay, in other words, where somebody says something into my ear, but it doesn't go out over the air for multiple seconds to keep people from saying stuff that shouldn't go out over the air. They said that my show is the only of all the shows they have. I'm starting to feel fluffed up already. The broadcast delay is set because of me. Yeah, they have a whole person there, as I understand it, at EWTN, that just sits and listens to the program, which is, I counted that as a listener, that ready to push the dump button because of something I might say. So I just want to say thank you. I hope they're getting me a plaque. Good to have you with me. This is E-Person Monday. I have in front of me, you can hear me ruffle them, a stack. I started printing them out again. I'm sorry. I'm my grandfather. I don't have to be sorry for being my grandfather. He was pretty good. But I can't scroll the phone and feel like I'm in touch with you. I like them sitting in front of me on paper. Excuse me. Now, some of these I do have on my phone because I just don't print them out yet. I go to my computer only when my little 4-year-old granddaughter is there, because then she can help me. Guide me through it. Okay, a couple of things before I go into our opening monologue. They say that, I hope they don't do this in child development like they did when I was in school. I hope. I don't know exactly what they teach in college, but a lot of it is just so clashing against reality. And one of the notions is that little boys, little girls are pretty much the same. And the only differences really are in socialization and what you expect of a little girl and what you expect of a little boy. And there's just massive amounts of research that says that is not true. We're wired different from the get-go. Now, do you ever listen to a little boy play by himself, you know, or what do you hear? Guttural, primordial, bowel-like effluences. You ever listen to a little girl play by herself? She doesn't know you're there. Hi, Jessica. I was waiting for your call. Why do we go down to the park this year? Okay. Well, I've got a couple things I have to finish doing before that, okay? But I really like going to the park at this time of year. The colors, the autumnal ambiance, the puce, the magenta, those are colors that chromatically imbue my spirit. Yes, I've just finished working a 1,000-piece puzzle. It took me about an hour. Yeah, well, I was reading the 30,000 Baby Name book at the time. Yeah, I love the multitask. Bring the baby Isaiah. Oh, I love that name, Isaiah. Oh, it's a great name, yes. Okay. That's a little girl, little boy. There's words sprinkled in here and there in between the sound effects. So this is something I ran across. I think it was very, very cute. They asked little kids, it looks like anywhere between 5 and 10. You know, that's prime childhood. On how do relationships form? What do you need to do? And I find it fascinating. You can see the boys' responses versus the girls' responses. What do most people do on a date? Now, Mike, age 9, says, on the first date, they just tell each other lies, and that usually gets them interested enough to go for a second date. How did he know how I won my wife over? That's what I want to know. And then Jim, age 10, was asked, when is it okay to kiss someone? You should never kiss a girl unless you have enough bucks to buy her a big ring and her own VCR, just in case she'll want to have videos of the wedding. Now, this was back, so that's back when VCRs were kind of hanging around. One more from Roger, age 9. What is falling in love like? Like an avalanche, where you have to run for your life. Now we ask the girls, on the role of good looks in love, if you want to be loved by somebody who isn't already in your family, it doesn't hurt to be beautiful. And then Christine says, beauty is skin deep, but how rich you are can last a long time. One final one, talking about the male ego, starting at age 7, on how important it is to be good looking. Gary, age 7, says this: it isn't always just how you look. Look at me. I'm handsome like anything, and I haven't gotten anybody to marry me yet. Where were these kids when the first, I think it was the first year or two of Living Right with Dr. Ray, we had what we called the real child psychologist, and I interviewed kids. I asked them about their parents and how do you know your parents are mad, kind of an Art Linkletter sort of thing, only I focused on family relations and discipline and who's stricter and how do you know what you have to say to convince your parents to do something that they don't want to let you do. All of that. By the way, just interesting thing. I missed the program this morning. I had a client, but Living Right with Dr. Ray, now moving into its 10th season. Well, back in one of our earlier seasons, and I just really get nervous about watching those early seasons because you realize how much you've aged in 10 years. It's like, oh, who's that young dude there? Man, he looks familiar. We had one of our most popular shows of all time. It was our Christmas show. And we had Father Joe, who came as St. Nicholas. And he was just absolutely wonderful in his portrayal of St. Nicholas. And at the end, I'll tell you, we did something that even brought a little tear to my eye. As crusty, curmudgeon-y as I am, brought a little tear to my eye. So the show already aired today, Eastern Time, 9:30. It airs Friday morning at 5 a.m. Yeah, something tells me they're trying to hide me. And I would believe that, except the main airing is on Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern. This is all Eastern times. So it's 9 Central, 10 Mountain, 7 Pacific, 4 Hawaii, 1 in the Marianas Trench out there on the other side of the International Dateline. Which means I said something dumb yesterday. It gets repeated, but it was one of our most popular shows. So just a heads up on that. Well, I wasted enough time to go straight to a break. When I come back, I'm going to the phone for the e-persons, and then I'm going to go to the stack. This is Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
He always starts with the good things. You know, the seven letters to the churches and the book of Revelation is a great way to write letters to other people, by the way, or to have conversations with other people. You start with what's going well. You do this, this, and this really well. I love it. Thank you. Here's what you're lacking. And I think for many of us as men, what the Lord's communicating at that second part of the letter or the second part of the conversation is, here's what we're lacking. You don't ever spend enough time with me. You have no idea what I'm trying to offer you in the gift of my friendship. Or if you do, you don't make time for it. And if you would but come to me, I would change your life like that. But you don't come. Not with the regularity that I want you to come. Not with the ardor and the fervor and the passion that I want you to come. I have a hunch, like more than a hunch, that's what he says to me. And I got a hunch that's what he would say to many of us.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
For two centuries, the ideologues of socialism or communism have used deceptive word jugglery to rebrand themselves as liberals or progressives.
Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
My Hammond, that's a Hammond B3, has a very unique sound. As a matter of fact, I don't make them anymore. But my Hammond is over at St. Joseph Elder Care Center. The last time I was there was in March, moving on to approximately a year from now. One thing I found is fascinating about playing at nursing homes, you don't have to worry about fights breaking out. When I used to play in the restaurants and the bars, we'd have a fight every so often. And me being a sensitive guy, I usually immediately went into the theme from Rocky. I remember one time a guy dove off of the bar onto some table. I guess he thought the guy was flirting with his wife or something. And you know me, I panicked because I was right in the middle of a love song, so I had to switch over to Rocky right away quick. Da-da-da, da-da-da. They broke it up pretty quick. But anyway, the organ is sitting over there. It's been 10 months since I've touched it. And I'm really starting to wonder if I can remember some of the chordings, if I can remember some of the songs. A lot of songs that when you play a lot, you know a lot of songs by heart, a ton of them. Were they fading away? So we'll see. All right, let's go to this one that I wanted to start out with, a little lighthearted one here for the moment. It's from Richard. One of the funniest things you ever said on your show is, you say that to all the potty training people. Now, apparently what happened is somebody may have given me a thanks for some piece of advice I gave him about potty training. That would be a good blurb to use at the beginning of the shows. So he asked this question. Should a pathetic, aging bachelor take your advice on child raising and apply it to himself? For example, putting himself in blackout for 2 hours each morning until his apartment is no longer filthy. That's right. You don't come out of there till your apartment's clean. Is this possible without accountability? And if the apartment becomes clean, then what is he supposed to do? There could be money in that for you, Dr. Ray. You know, Richard, you are not that far off. My second book was a book titled Back to the Family. We interviewed strong families in all 50 states. They were nominated by National State Teachers of the Year as one of the most admirable, exemplary families they'd seen in terms of morals and character, and they based this upon seeing their children. One mother said, as she was dealing with the issue of disrespect from her children, that she had him write an essay on disrespect. And one of the kids accused her one day of, well, how come you don't have to write any essays when you talk to us that way? And she said, you know, that's a good point. I will too. I will write you a letter of apology when I get snotty with you or bad tone of voice or scolding. I think that's a very nice idea. At the very least, it's going to breed some goodwill with the kids because figured, okay, the rules are for everybody here. But then I suggested to her, well, instead of the essay, why don't you just make yourself go to your room for an hour? Lock the door. Get the bubble bath. 1 hour. I think my wife did something like that once. She was timing herself out in her room. She told the kids, yeah, I'll be in my room. I'm timing myself out. She took a nap. But it's Richard, that ain't a bad idea. All right, see what we got here. Now, this is a very, very, I think, insightful gentleman, Dr. Ray. His name is Dr. Ray, really. I don't want to say his last name. Okay, following up on your monologue last week, well, no, more than that, you mentioned that you thought the bishop's telling the Catholic world that the Sunday Mass obligation, that it was temporarily suspended. That is the reason why so many are not returning. I believe it or not, I don't think it's the main one. I don't know if I implied that. I don't think it's the main one. So Ray goes on, I do believe you are correct, but I might argue that the foundation has been laid for several generations, and this is just making it come home to roost. You know, I do agree with that. I think there has been major mass attendance slippage since the 60s. If you look at the stats in the early 60s, roughly 70% of self-identified Catholics were at Mass on Sunday. That's huge. That's huge. Way, way above non-Catholic Christian attendance. If you look at it now, roughly anywhere between 25 and 30% of self-identified Catholics are in Mass. Now, wait, this was before COVID. Okay, it's plummeted since then. But before COVID, 25 to 30, maybe 35%. Which is, by the way, lower than, believe it or not, what you would call the independent non-denominational evangelical / Baptist attendance. Yeah, I know, and they don't have to go. Okay, Dr. Ray, you may recall the Pew study 1 year ago that showed that 70% of church-going Catholics do not believe in the real presence. So many bishops and priests downplayed the survey, calling it flawed and calling into error the results. Well, okay, Ray, I'm going to weigh in on the side of the bishop's interpretation. I saw that survey, and there were two questions on it. The one I saw was multiple choice, and this is reported in First Things. I'll tell you, I wouldn't have known what to answer. That was some real subtlety theologically there. And I could easily see. Now, I've seen other surveys, that have shown the numbers as high as 80 to 90% believe in the real presence. Now, I don't know if they really knew what the real presence meant. I think it's safe to say if you parallel this to church attendance, now, you said it's church-going Catholics, but if you parallel this to church attendance, it's likely that as, of course, church attendance goes down, you're right. Beliefs, core beliefs of Catholic morals and doctrine are going to go down, too. That makes sense. All righty. I would contend, now this is Ray again. I would contend that as in my work of the apostolate of Lighthouse Catholic Media, being an extraordinary minister and just being too observant during communion, he puts in parentheses, instead of thanking our Lord. Yeah, I know. There is a, do you remember that? There is a tendency during communion. I had one lady tell me she keeps her eyes closed looking down because she doesn't want to look up because the temptation to be judgmental is too prevalent. Who's wearing what? Who has to kneel? Who is being hyper-devotional? Don't we do it? I mean, it's just so much a part of the human condition. I thought 70% not believing was too low. In other words, what he's saying is that he thinks it's more than that. There are so many church-going Catholics, myself included before 12 years ago, that do not take our Lord seriously. And now that percentage, and he says 70, I really don't think it's that high, just because I've seen other surveys that contradict it. And now those 70% who don't believe are told it is not a mortal sin to miss Mass. Well, to be a little theologically picky here, it would be a grievous sin. Whether a grievous sin is mortal or not is a number of factors. They are wondering, why did I go in the first place? Right, I can see that. Logically speaking, if you say, I really don't believe that little white wafer is anything other than a nice little thing to do during Mass. Okay, then you're right. They're at the anything that makes Catholic worship radically, distinctly, what's the word I'm looking for? Substantively different than any other Protestant, non-Catholic, not necessarily Orthodox, of course, then you're right. The vast majority of folks, when I would offer them a free CD or encourage them to tune into EWTN Radio, would mock the things, I know that already. Some of these folks are daily Mass attendees. Anyway, someone's thought as someone who more of an undercurrent regarding the why behind the people not coming back to church. I personally believe, Ray, that the main reason is out of the habit. We are creatures of routine. We are creatures of regimen. Sunday you go to church. That's what you do. That's what Sundays are for. Well, now they're not. As the momentum for soccer and sports and other distracting activities enters in, Mass attendance has been going down. And in the belly of that survey, by the way, oh boy, this isn't good. Marcelino D'Ambrosio told me about this one, is that even though Mass attendance may still be at 25 and 30 and 35% of self-identified Catholics, the bulk of those are not young people. They are middle-aged and elderly. That doesn't bode well. Not sure when you are live again. My schedule is compressed during these last days. Yes, he's a doctor. Okay, Dr. Ray. That's his name, too. He's a real Dr. Ray. I always send out a note when I handle the e-persons that I had addressed it, and it will be coming up. So, good stuff, Ray. Again, to reiterate, this was one of my earliest predictions. I said that once we say that we cannot take proper precautions, and isn't it interesting? Just think about this, though. And this is where I live in Ohio. When the numbers were much lower in May, June, July, many of the churches were not open at all. At all. Well, now that those numbers are peaking again, moving up. I don't say surge. They're moving up because, of course, this is what happens in the wintertime with any kind of virus. So you'd expect one like this would really jump up. Although more and more people are coming out and saying, if you have COVID in your system, no matter what you die of, it's a COVID death. So the churches are now open at limited capacity with masks and social distancing. Why wasn't it that way then? Because there's a lot of floundering going on here. Dr. Ray.
Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching four more times over the next four verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truth of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
What is the most daunting petition in the Lord's Prayer? The Catholic Catechism says it is when we ask God our Father to forgive our sins as we forgive others, meaning if we do not forgive those who have sinned against us, we don't expect the Father to forgive us. God's outpouring of mercy cannot penetrate our hearts as long as we have not forgiven those who have trespassed against us. This is sobering. The Catechism says there has to be a vital participation coming from the depths of the heart in the holiness and the mercy and the love of God. Only the Holy Spirit can make our mind the same as the mind of Jesus Christ, who could forgive even those who crucified him. The heart that offers itself to the Holy Spirit can turn injury into compassion, purifying the memory so as to transform the hurt into intercession. Forgiveness bears witness to the world that love is stronger than hate. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Now, would that be country or western? What would that be? I remember when I had a bass player that I played with. Somebody would request a song, and I'd go, Kenny, I never really heard this song. What genre is it? And his standard answer was, well, it's kind of a rock samba with a little bit of cha-cha thrown in, and hip-hop.
Okay.
I think I got it. This is from a delightful, delightful young lady. She sent me a picture of herself and her little boy. Darling picture, both mom and baby, just darling. And she brought up a point that I had come across a fair amount as an adoptive parent and even as talking with potential adoptive parents. One of the reasons, and I talked about this prompted Jeannie to write this letter. One of the reasons I said, I still think it's the main one, is that young mothers do not place their baby for adoption is because it is now viewed, believe it or not, ironically, as more irresponsible than abortion. It is now viewed as I could never do that. I could never spend my life wondering where my baby is. Now, in the last 20 years, that's even changed. I think a competing motivation is this. I want a baby. I just want one. I want to have it on Facebook. I want to be a baby mama. This is cool. Maybe my boyfriend will hang around. Yeah, there's just a lot of... Now they're deliberately choosing to get pregnant. Before, it was, well, it happened, but not now. Well, Jeannie brought up a good point, and I have seen this, by the way, not only, I think, in our family, but... in others who have contacted me. I'm writing in response to one of your talk shows on the issue of child adoption you had a few days ago. You mentioned, Dr. Ray, that there are over 1 million people looking to adopt babies and that single moms do not want to give up their babies. That's true. I still maintain that's the main reason. Unfortunately, yes, and I'm aware of this, Jeannie, the laws have it so that the dad has to sign his rights away for an adoption to happen, as I have found in my experience. Yes, one of the most common things I've seen, Gene, is that the paternal grandparents say, no, we'll raise the baby. You can't do this. You can't place this child for adoption in a loving home that is religious, because in many cases, the family who wants to adopt is not religious at all. Zero zip nada. Last fall, I was finishing my last year of college, and I made a mistake with a guy who got me pregnant. He was pressuring me on many occasions to get an abortion, but I told him I was going to have the baby. And I wanted the baby to go to a stable Catholic home. I'm now being forced into a co-parenting relationship with an abusive, godless man because he would not sign his rights away. And that takes away the option to adopt. Now, that may be that state. Some moms do this. I'm not advocating it, but some moms do it. They say, I don't know who the father is. That's what they say. Okay. And I know I'm hearing some people thinking, well, Jeannie, you should have thought of this godless, abusive man, when you had physical relations with him. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that because Lord knows I've done things in my life that could have had long-lasting ramifications. This is a huge problem, Dr. Ray. I've been in touch with people from, then she mentions the state, and they told me this is happening everywhere because women don't want to give their baby to the abusive dad who gets first dibs. Yeah, I could see more and more of this. These are all just such common byproducts of a morally decaying culture. More people are hooking up, and it doesn't matter who they're hooking up with, and a high percentage of these people are just, they have no moral compass. They're probably running their lives poorly, and they are very self-centered and self-absorbed, and this is a serious consequence of the hookup amoral culture. Dr. Ray, it is almost like the laws punish a woman for being pro-life and giving birth. And somehow, it is okay for a mom to get an abortion up to 9 months without the dad having to sign their rights away. It makes no sense. And Jeannie, immorality makes absolutely no sense. Immorality is illogical. Immorality doesn't hold together. You're absolutely, totally, completely correct. And this is, I said, a major byproduct of the sexual anything goes in our culture. It no longer comes with responsibility for the vast majority of people. You want to hear an interesting stat? The number of people that enter marriage as a virgin? One survey said 3%. So when you have all this going on, and there will be babies, and if the birth mom says, I can't get an abortion, I want to place this child in a loving home, the birth dad says, no way, no way. You know the irony too, though, and this has been my experience, these so involved birth dads disappear. Oh, yeah, in the beginning, that's my kid. And they usually have their own parents pushing on them, by the way. But it is, in my experience, a minority of these birth dads who stay involved in this child's life. Please keep my baby and me in your prayers. I sure will. I sure will. And she says, we listen to your show every night. Well, Jeannie, I hope you're going to catch this one. Okie doke. Anything more for me to say? I saw a stat that said approximately 1% of pregnant single moms place the baby for adoption. 1%. It is a reflection of our self-absorbed culture that says, this is mine. Nobody could love it like I could love it. Nobody could give it the stability, the morality, all that I can give it. And I've seen so many incredibly irresponsible single moms keep the baby. And I've been around long enough to watch these babies grow. And much of the time, it just ain't pretty. So, Jeannie's situation is a rather sad one. It's a rather tragic one. But the one good thing about it is, she sounds, and the brief communication here like a very responsible, loving, faith-filled young lady. So I got to believe she's going to, I hope, meet a faith-filled young man who will be a good husband and a great daddy. Or a great, great husband and a good daddy, one or the other, maybe both. And in that sense, Jeannie, you got that. You got that to look forward and hope for and pray for. There's a good chance for you and for your little baby.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5. Is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I, you know, made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction. But they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, you know, from Mom and Dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. That's, my generation got too much of that, was, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly, affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about. And you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
Just trying to show you I know a little bit of classical music, too, because I think Rembrandt has written some of the most wonderful music. I really do. And, you know, people accuse me of not being classic. Aren't classy? Are you kidding? I know that stuff. Mozart has some fabulous paintings. I think I got one of them hanging in my office. Yeah. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me and Andrew Krucek, my producer man. Somebody said to me once, you call him your board operator. Now, is that B-O-A-R-D, as in operating all the technical board there? Or is it board, B-O-R-E-D? I wrote back. I said, both. We moved into a new neighborhood this year. My 5-year-old son made friends quickly. 2 other 5-year-olds in the neighborhood. My husband and I have come to be friends with each of their parents as well. It's natural now for any time one neighbor is outside, the rest will follow. Been nice to have friends for my homeschooled son and companions for myself. Weekly hangouts are almost expected now, as the kids are ringing our doorbell to get our son outside to play almost every day after school. Well, that's probably too much anyway. You know, you can say, you know, pick and choose one day or two that he can go out. This way you don't have to supervise all 5 days. Besides, I would guess that your neighbors kind of like their kid coming over to your house to play. The thing is, the 5-year-old girl's behavior is getting a bit much. Saying very mean or inappropriate things. I'd like to know what those inappropriate things are. Unfortunately, sadly, if they go to school
Oftentimes, they're very sexually inappropriate things. Just acting out constantly and being disobedient. You can use your imagination, Dr. Ray. Now, here's a classic line. It's probably considered, quote, normal kid stuff, says my husband. Well, unfortunately, if you're going to use the word normal, which means typical or average, normal is usually considered the middle 70% of the continuum. That's a lot. And unfortunately, if you believe the surveys, what normal five-year-olds know now compared to what normal five-year-olds knew even a generation or two ago is much more worldly. Much more worldly. 1960-something, you let your kid in front of the TV, your kid saw Andy Griffith. I Love Lucy. You don't want to leave a five-year-old in front of a TV now at all. You just don't. Oh, unless you have some cable station that you're fully confident in. Okay, or an EWTN show for little kids. But short of that, that five-year-old most likely knows a lot more than your son knows, Cheyenne, because your son's homeschooled. Her mother does yell at her, but not actually discipline her. All right, so you got the parents being aware that the kid is becoming a little bit of a behavior problem for the parent. I'm not saying she's a behavior problem. She's a behavior problem for the parent. So for one, Dr. Ray, it's annoying. But also, it's not how I want my son to ever act or to disobey like her or to say. Now, here's the big one for me. I'm not all that worried about her disobeying her mother because you're not her mother and you can stop your son. So whatever he picks up somewhere else, he'll find out real quick that doesn't go with this mommy. But you said this. Or saying the things she says or does. Now, on one hand, if some of these things are just snotty, mean, all right, I'm not. But if she is sexual and worldly, and by the way, we had this problem with my son when he was in kindergarten. He was coming home with all kinds of words and stuff. It's like, whoa, he's picking this up from kids in kindergarten. We homeschooled when he got to second grade, but that was one of the reasons, by the way, he's losing his innocence so fast. Do I teach my son to be loving to her even when she's mean? Well, it's hard to teach a five-year-old to be loving. Five-year-olds are five-year-olds. Okay, they respond to the situation. The idea of generic loving of humanity or another person is a concept that stretches them. And to try to teach him patience with her, well, again, Cheyenne, it comes down to what she's saying. On one hand, if she's just being a little bratty, it's my turn, it's my ball, I had it first, I get two and you only get one. Okay, he can deal with that. But if it starts to become cuss words and sexuality and it's apparent that she's watching more and more and seeing more and more, I'm irritated by her more than my son as they're over every 2 minutes. Yow. So am I just being the annoyed mom that needs to really be the one to learn patience, or should I act now in their young age to be careful with his friend picks? Well, a couple of things. We had a situation like that. We had three neighbor boys that would come over to play with my son. My son at the time was probably eight or nine. The boys were in range from 7 to 12, something like that. And they came over, and they'd want to play ball, backyard, cool. But then I noticed the language. Then I noticed kind of bullying, snottiness. So here's how we did it. If I can supervise you, if I can keep one ear sort of on the situation, I'll let you play. Boys, I hear the language, the game's over right now. Right now. I see anything that looks like you guys are mistreating each other, that's it. Game's over. They stopped coming over after a while. They didn't like our rules. If you can supervise this very, very closely and you can step in immediately, in other words, you could do it maybe if she comes in the house or with your windows open. I mean, it sounds like, this is This is, you wrote this in a winter month, so it sounds like you must live somewhere where it's warm because he come over. The other thing you do is you can limit time. In other words, yeah, he can come out for an hour on Wednesday. Sure. And you can just tell her parents that, yeah, we're homeschooling's dragging on. It really is. He's getting into heavier stuff, and it's taking a lot longer. Yeah, that's what you do. Do I be careful with his friend picks? I wrote a book on teens, and one of the questions in there is, can you pick their friends? And I said, yeah, you better. You better pick the pool from where they can choose. You may not be able to pick their particular friend all the time because you don't have the supervision or the leverage, especially when they're at school or elsewhere. But you better pick the pool because the number one, by the way, and this is not my opinion, it's research, factor in a kid drifting in a bad direction is the peers. It's the peers. Many people have noticed that their kids become much more manageable, much less socially testy if they move. And the peer group that was once there is no longer there. Said it would be difficult for us to put limits on this because avoiding them would quickly become very obvious. I don't think it has to be obvious. You have to avoid them. You have to say, no, we don't want you. We don't want your kid coming over and play with my kid anymore. All you do is you start sending her home for bad behavior or anything. Now, if it gets sexual, then you got to tell mom, their mom. You say, hey, you know what she said? That makes me real nervous. My son doesn't know anything about that. He came in and he asked me and he was all confused. Yes, absolutely. The brattiness, okay, maybe he'll get tired of playing with her. Maybe he'll say, she's a brat. Or he may try some of that stuff on you, at which you will deal with it and he won't try it on you anymore. Okay, so I don't suspect that she'll influence him that much. He's being raised quite differently. You won't lose your friendship as you make it look like, we're busy and he just can't go out and play every night. By the time I get him in bed, it's 7 o'clock, 7:30. He does work with me. We started working in the afternoons more, et cetera, et cetera. You can do that. You can thin it out. She closes. But this is all starting to drive me bonkers. I can see that. This is one of the main problems I come across with parents, is that they're trying to raise an innocent kid. You know, 5-year-olds should be innocent, for heaven's sake. Yeah, when I was a boy, there were bratty 5-year-olds all over the place. But they didn't have the worldliness that kids now have. That's a given. The technological input that the parents allow. And plus going to school, where a lot of the other kids are being raised very differently. So if you're trying to protect your child's innocence, yeah, you're going to have to keep a close eye on how much and whom they hang with or allow to come over. Maybe make them play in the house. You have an eye and ear on the whole situation. I'm Dr. Ray.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
Before Abraham was, I am.
The omniscience of God is a mystery, but here's a clue. Physicists tell us that reality consists of many more dimensions than the 4 of space-time we live in. Imagine from God's perspective that in addition to the 3 dimensions of space, he also perceives 3 dimensions of time. Imagine that God observes time like we observe a 3-dimensional table. Along the top of God's timetable are stretched the timelines of every one of your family and friends. At a glance, he sees everyone's birth, the events of their lives, how the timelines cross, and the moment of their death. Imagine that Jesus sees our time like we see space. Impossible? We really have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
That wasn't the stuff I played at the nursing home. Stuff I played in the sleazy bars.
Yep. Boy, I got, looks like about 3.5 minutes here. And I'm looking for a short, quick. Well, let's try this. This is from John. Might not even answer, but I think it's got some insight to it. A response to your question statement of why everyone is so afraid of COVID. I don't know if this is the answer, but it is for me. I used to be afraid when I had thoughts of death. Until I realized how important it is to be ready for death. That's right. I'm working on a new book, and one of the manuscript's chapters is that we just have pushed death so far away, and health is the new God. Once I started taking my faith more seriously, praying every day and receiving the sacrament of reconciliation on a regular basis, I found that I was accepting it eventually with peace. I'm only 59, but I've seen a lot of death, and I fully understand that it can come at any time. Yeah, one of the most inexplicable things to me is when people say, his death was unexpected. Death is never unexpected. It may have been unexpected at that time and assumed that it came at a time when a percentage of people, only a small percentage, have death intrude in their lives, but it's never unexpected. I'm not afraid of COVID, and I don't want to die now. But I sure do feel better knowing that I try my hardest to stay prepared for it. That's right. The old country song, live like you're dying. Well, if you live like you're dying, you can die like you lived. I have to wonder how much the majority of other Catholics are ready for that. My experience is that it now has become so frightening. Even though for the vast majority of healthy people up into their 50s, 60s, and even 70s, they're healthy. This is a virus with a very low mortality rate, much lower than we think, because a bunch of people, by the way, the mortality rate is based upon those who test positive. I think, and I believe, and I've seen research, that the vast majority of people never go get tested. They have symptoms, or maybe they don't, or they attribute it to something else, or maybe they know it's COVID and they self-quarantine and they're over it. My wife and I both had it about a month ago. Let's see. I think we did anyway, but I sure do better. Most of the time, my comments are met with a grunt or disinterested response. A lot of times they look away. Yeah. John, I could see that. You are not the narrative. You are not what our secular culture has said you must think like. One person said to me, I don't want to be so afraid of dying that I stop living. I like to say I enjoy going to confession. I never have to wait in line. He says, God bless you, Dr. Ray, for stirring it up. Well, you know what I'd say about that, John, for stirring it up? You can only stir it up when offering a perspective about some aspects, and that's all I've ever done, offering a perspective about some aspects of our response to this. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to, more and more is going to come out. 43,000 doctors and healthcare workers. I think it's the Barrington statement. They came out with just their views. These, you know, this is not, they're not, you're going to call them all conspiracy theorists. You're going to call them all overreact. I mean, okay, I don't know if it was a conspiracy thing, but they were saying, look, we got to look at this in other ways too. So it's outside the narrative. And John, the fact that you're saying, I want to be prepared to die. I want to take proper precaution. Not stupid. I'm not going to walk in front of a truck. But at the same time, I can't live like this. And interesting, you say, unfortunately, a whole lot of people are living like that. They won't go out of their homes. They won't go to mass. They won't go to eat. I've had people say they haven't been in a restaurant for 8 months. Okay, your decision. Gotta go, gotta run. Thank you so much for being with me on this E-Person Monday. Tomorrow, good Lord permitting, I'll be seeing you, and we can talk ear to ear. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. Don't be afraid of that walk, huh?
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.